Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Hop-Ons podcast, a Twin Peaks review podcast sponsored by our Patreon supporters. My name is Colin Cox.
My name is John Phelps. Hello, buddy.
John, hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, man?
Not too bad. John, this week we have another interview. We were extremely fortunate to have John Bernardi from the website 25YL, and he was here to talk to us about Judy and Judy theories. It was a wonderful conversation.
Yeah, absolutely it was. I learned a lot about Judy that I didn't know, changed my opinion about Judy. It was a very good time. I think everyone will enjoy it. I hope they do at least.
No, I completely agree. And listen, before we actually kick to that interview, I wanted to highlight something one of our listeners said on Twitter. They responded to us, Alex, and I'll link to this in the show notes. They offered a response to our conversation from last week with Andrew about notions of victimhood and, in particular, Lynch's just cinematic choices and techniques. And that's all I'll say. Again, I'll link to it in the show notes, but I would encourage everyone to go and read what Alex said because they offer just smart and insightful analysis, something that I wish we would have included in the episode. And it was, again, I cannot compliment Alex enough for their commentary and analysis. It's just something I think everyone, if you like Twin Peaks and you enjoyed that conversation with Andrew, I think it's something worth reading.
And before we go, Colin, we'd like to thank our Patreon supporters. I think that you have the list of those amazing people.
I have a list of those amazing people. Those amazing people go by the following names: Jason, Ryan, Rob, Jeff, Karen, Andrew, and Amy. If you want to support the Hop-Ons podcast, become a producer, you can follow the link in the show notes. You can also rate and review the podcast. We'll read those ratings and reviews here on the podcast.
And if you don't want to become a producer, that's cool. We get it. The times are tough right now. But if you throw $3 a month our way, you get exclusive content, baby. All that stuff you don't hear on here. I've made 3 fucking theme parks. You can hear all about them. They're great.
That's correct.
Also, Colin did a mayonnaise egg. You can watch that.
I was about to say, yeah, there's a video where I consume, where I make a mayonnaise egg in my mouth. I do a mayonnaise egg in the mouth, but it doesn't stay in the mouth very long.
And that's just $3, and you can see a mayonnaise egg. So, just saying, you're all great. Rate and review. Everybody's good. Love you. Okay.
John, I've actually made a couple of phone calls. That video where I eat the mayonnaise egg, it's valued at $24. So
there you go. You're getting a deal.
You're getting a deal. I called Drew Carey. He did the Price is Right calculations. It's worth $24. That's $24 worth of content. You could get it for $3, and you only need to sign up for a month, and you can see me eat a mayonnaise egg.
All right, well, that. we hope you enjoy the interview for the Hop-Ons podcast. My name is John Phelps.
My name is Colin Cox. Again, my consumption of a mayonnaise egg is valued at $24. Check it out. So, John, we are extremely excited to have another John on the podcast, John Bernardi. He's also affiliated with the website 25YL, and he is the managing editor for all things Twin Peaks at 25YL. John B., thank you for joining us tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Excellent. So, John B., again, I think I probably need to be as clear as possible about this.
Yeah.
We wanted to have you on to talk to us a little bit about Judy, because I think as John and I watched The Return, I think one of the more confounding aspects of that narrative was, who the hell is this Judy figure that at times we seem to receive a fair amount of clarity about, but at other times this figure's just mired in obscurity. So you're here to talk to us about Judy, and I think one of the best places to start is to just ask you, what exactly do we know about Judy within the Twin Peaks mythology?
It's actually kind of a short list. So Philip Jeffries appears in Fire Walk With Me in that one scene in 1989. He just pops up and he says he's not going to talk about Judy. In fact, they're not going to talk about Judy at all. They're going to keep her out of it. And the next time he says anything about Judy, it's in part 15. And that's when he tells Doppelcooper that Doppelcooper has met Judy before. So behind the scenes, over the years, we've gotten interviews from Bob Engels. And he says that Judy was going to be Josie Packard's twin sister. Per Gordon Cole in part 17, Judy is an extreme negative force, you know, straight from Gordon's mouth. It doesn't say anything about being evil. It's known as Jowday, and there's a plan made by Gordon, Cooper, and Briggs to find it, not kill it or anything, not obliterate it like a bomb, just find it. And per Tamara Preston in the final dossier, Judy is a Sumerian Ituku demon known as Jowdy that when mating with a male Ituku can bring about the end of the world as we know it. And I think that's about it.
It sounds like Ghostbusters to me. So
it does. As a Ghostbuster vibe. I know, John, that there are a ton of theories about who Judy really is. I have my own. I think Colin has his own. But you wrote an essay about sort of the most popular, and if you would care to maybe summarize those for us, we can just sort of deep dive into this whole world of theories.
Oh, yeah. I wrote a favorites back in 2019, and I started out with, like, one of my favorites was it was another victim of Bob. So that kind of ties it into Philip Jeffries having Judy, Chet Desmond having Teresa Banks, and Dale Cooper having Laura Palmer. So there's nice, you know, symmetry there. And that was kind of what Robert Engels and David Lynch were starting with back when they created her, other than, you know, David Lynch basically saying, I don't know what it means. And then there's all sorts of other things. Yeah, I mean, Major Briggs was a popular destination for Judy, you know, Garland, Judy Garland.
I don't think I ever fucking put that together until this moment. Wow. Yeah. Okay, great.
Yeah, there's all kinds of deep references with the names back in the day. But yeah, no, I mean, some people have said that the white horse could be Judy, experiment model, experiment itself. There's right, all right. sorts of things.
That's the one that Colin and I sort of ran mm-hmm. with at the beginning. Was this weird experiment that sort of vomits Bob into being? That's the one that I knew the most about. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I think. If I had to make bets on what Frost and Lynch were thinking of to begin with, I would say that was probably supposed to actually be Judy. But, you know, with conjecture the way it is, there's all sorts of other ways. I'm fond of the evil that women do, and I'm sure we'll be talking about that. And Sarah Palmer, who is, I'd say probably Sarah Palmer is the consensus pick out of, you know, the fandom. Depending on where you look, I'd say Sarah Palmer would be the one that would come up the most. But I kind of like Nato. Nato is a good pick too. You know, Nato. She was in part 3.
No, the woman with no eyes, right?
Yes. Yeah, okay. Exactly. And T. Kyle King from Wrapped In Podcast, he had this amazing thing. He came up with this whole string of why it works that Nato would be Judy, and he said that like right after the series was over, and we actually have that up on our site now, which is wonderful. 25YL collects everything Twin Peaks we can. T. Kyle King said that Nato could be Judy because you see Nato redirecting Cooper into, you know, from the one electric outlet to the other electrical outlet. Like it changed from 3 to 15, I believe. So the path that he was supposed to be on, she kind of redirected it. And then, you know, put him in the path of, you know, the hitmen, Ike the Spike, the Mitchums, you know, it's like all these obstacles that could possibly, you know, clip Cooper's wings. Mm-hmm. And then when we see Nato again, is the moment that the superimposed Cooper head shows up. And, you know, it's like, that's almost like, Cooper, like, you know, okay, so Dale went into Dougie, which was kind of like a waking dream situation. And then when he sees Nato again, then she kind of puts him in a different dream state. So in part 17, when Dale sees Nato again, it kind of becomes a different kind of Diane, one that's like extra interested in Dale. And it just seems like the way T. Kyle King said it, Nato was Judy keeping an eye on Dale through the entire second half of part 17 and part 18 in some way or another. You know, whether it was Diane or whether it was the car following Dale and Laura Carey back to Twin Peaks, you know, it's like there's always an eye being kept on.
How does that perhaps inform the way we should think about what Cole says, what in part 16 about Judy being this negative force? Are we thinking this redirecting of Cooper is part of this negativity associated with the character? Because I think you made an interesting point, which was we shouldn't conflate negativity with evil, but I think people often do that. So how should we think about how the way this person whose name I've forgotten, the way they characterize Judy, how we should think about it as it relates to Nato, I guess, as this kind of observer or watcher figure?
Okay, so the plan that Gordon Cole was talking about, where Judy was the ultimate negative force that they were looking to find, that was between Gordon, Dale, and Major Briggs. And there was a plan that the firemen seemed to be helping with as well. And all of those guys were looking to, you know, stop or find Judy. And Judy didn't want to be found. Mm. So the best way to hide is in plain sight.
Oh, okay. But still, like, Judy is much more of a not nearly as an evil figure then, correct?
I would say so, just in general.
Right. Okay.
Boy, are you, John, are you familiar with the Edgar Allan Poe story, The Purloined Letter?
I am not.
Okay, so, like, I want you to read this story because this is fascinating to me because it's basically this story about someone stealing this letter and instead of like absconding with it, they basically steal it and put it basically right back where they stole it, because that's the one place you wouldn't look for it. And that's really fascinating, that instead of thinking of Judy as this like Thanos-like villain, instead Judy is potentially the person right beside you, because you would never look right beside you to find the source of pure negativity or pure evil or all of that. Yeah, I think, but I guess my question at this point is, well, what are, and I think this really gets to, as you said, the consensus among the Twin Peaks fan community about Sarah being Judy, even though we were talking about Nato as Judy. What do you think are Judy's ultimate motivations then?
I honestly don't know what the motivation is supposed to be. If I had to pick any one thing, I think Judy is an invention of Dale Cooper that's kind of keeping him from waking up in some way or another. And just like how people were, you know, or how Diane was calling him Richard and she was calling herself Linda, in Fire Walk With Me, you know, Jacques was the Great Went. You know, I mean, like, it's like whenever you're in a negative space, you have a completely different name. So, like, I wouldn't be shocked if Judy is just like a placeholder name for something like the evil that women do or the ultimate negative force. You know, it's just like, it's a name that doesn't really explain what the thing is. You know, it's like you're in this negative state anyway. So why would you be able to see it for what it is? You would call it something completely different because your eyes aren't working or your experience is clouded.
Wow, that's fascinating. Yeah, so you keep using this phrase, the evil that women do, because I think, John, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think we always assumed that Judy was perhaps an expression of, like, the evil that men do in the world. Can you talk a little bit about this idea of Judy as the evil that women do?
Well, Bob was the evil that men do. And, you know, back in part 16, I want to say it was Albert that said it, but it might have been the major. But yeah, so there was this obvious connection that way. And the return tends to sort of invert the original series, like things would happen in reverse order, or they would just be a little bit off. You know, like in the final dossier, Bobby was dating Shelley and then Laura, whereas, you know, in original continuity, it was Laura and then Shelley. And, you know, it's like there's some things like that that, you know, obviously this is meant to be something. You know, there's too many reversals and too many, like, exact opposites happening. So it's based on all that pattern, it makes a lot of sense to at least entertain the fact that Judy is the evil that women do, because, you know, Bob is sort of a bit part in this. You know, he is not the end game, because if he was the end game, the show would have just ended at the end of part, you know, halfway through part 17, and there wouldn't be anything extra. But, you know, if you know, a lot of people call that a boss fight battle. Yeah. But you know, the boss never, like, the final boss always has a second evolution, or it changes, you know, from one to another. So, you know, Judy being the end boss kind of is fitting. And in that case, you know, the evil that women do is something worth thinking about because of how we see Sarah in the return.
I think along those lines, then, if we're thinking about Judy as this concept of the evil that women do, then I guess that, I think, further, to me at least, provides evidence to the idea that the being that we see at the beginning of part 8 would be Judy, as maybe, like, if we look at that as, like, a female form, as she is birthing Bob. So, like, she is the ultimate evil, birthing the evil that men do. And I guess I could read into that, and I sort of dig that, I guess.
Yeah, I do too. I think because, but it's also interesting to me how I think there's this assumption that whatever this entity is that maybe we see in either part 1 or part 2 and then again in part 8 is female, and I'm not sure if like, it's just interesting to me how we want to gender these figures in such stark binary terms, you know, male, female, when I can't help but look at a figure like Judy and think she looks, or it looks, they look more androgynous than anything else. And how, because it sounds like, aside from maybe Garland Briggs, a lot of the theories about who Judy is and what Judy is, they're often perhaps possessed by characters who identify as female, whether it's Nido or Sarah Palmer, and I don't know, John, do you have any thoughts about that? Just the way, like, we seem to want to construct these binaries regarding Judy and Bob as male, female, instead of seeing Judy as an androgynous figure.
Well, I think just by, you know, naming her Judy, and then Philip Jeffrey saying you've met her before, yeah, that's enough to to go on with that line. But yeah, I mean, I if just in general, I would tend to think of it as a more universal concept as well. And I mean, honestly, I call Judy a red herring on a regular basis. So, right. Yeah, I don't really fall into the, you know, it's definitely a female or like any of that kind of stuff. But I mean, it's around enough where we're supposed to think our way through it anyway.
Can you talk about that a little bit? Because I think this is where perhaps the three of us agree that Judy is more of a red herring and less of an actual person, thing, entity in the world. When you say that Judy's a red herring, what do you mean by that exactly?
Well, I think that Dale really, really, really wants to solve cases, and he really wants to rescue women, and he really wants to just be the hero guy riding in and, you know, doing the job and, you know, getting the thanks and, you know, big thumbs up from the boss and, you know, let's go get donuts. I think just in general, like, he's that kind of guy. He's coded that way as a guy who falls under white knight syndrome all the time, according to the final dossier. And, you know, just by hearing how he was with Caroline Earle and, you know, I mean, even Audrey up to a point, you know, it's like, you know, you got to rescue the girl there. They don't necessarily have agency, or if they did, you know, it's like they're just not able to use it. So, you know, he just, you know, goes in and conquers and takes over and solves the problem.
So, I mean, I guess like in that way, the way you're talking about Judy is really as this thing that figures like Dale Cooper construct to potentially justify their actions and behavior, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that really seems to track with a lot of what John and I talked about throughout the season, where it seems like Twin Peaks is more of a critique of a figure like Cooper and less of an endorsement of a figure like Cooper. And to imagine that what he's ultimately trying to do is just to create situations where he can justify his behavior. Yeah, that seems to track. Can you talk a little bit though about why is a figure like Gordon Cole then even invested in the idea of a figure like Judy? So what investment does Cole have here?
Well, the way that I've been seeing Twin Peaks, like just in general, there are time loops that Dale has been going through, and kind of like what Andrew was talking about last week about how Dale just seems to be trapped, and you know, he's kind of repeating things, and he's, you know, it's like he starts out at 70-80% aware of what's going on around him, and you know, he gets a little bit closer every time, but he just can't quite get there. I kind of feel like what he's doing in the lodge is like influencing the real world, kind of like a fog, imagine the world being a movie theater screen, and then the lodge space activities that Dale is part of is projecting right on top of that screen. So like, you know, it's like you're getting the world and you're getting the people in the world, but they're being influenced because the veil between the worlds is so thin, especially because of how Dale Cooper's been trapped, and you know, the plan of the firemen and the Philip Gerard and all them. So like, just imagine like a commingled world, you know, for intents and purposes, you know, before I completely sidetrack by explaining what I mean. But so I kind of feel like depending on which frequency Gordon Cole is hearing through those hearing aids, like sometimes he's a little more lodge space inclined and he can be on that frequency that Dale in lodge space kind of needs him to be on. Mm. So yeah, that's kind of how I think about, like, that's where Judy exists, is in this weird hybrid reality. You know, it's like, it doesn't exactly exist anywhere else. And that's why you can still have like Sarah Palmer fitting into things, and like having her have her own like angle on how Judy was created or anything, you know. It's yeah, it's all a little esoteric and it takes a while to to dig through, but I've been digging.
So can you talk a little bit then about how perhaps Sarah fits into all of this as a potential explanation for Judy?
Yeah, so the poem, the horse is the light of the eyes, you know, I mean, she's been known to see horses. So there's the connection there. And the white of the eyes, and I mean, this is not my original idea at all, of course, but, you know, like if you're looking away from something, that's when you see somebody's whites of their eyes. So,
Wow, okay.
Yeah. And Sarah's big crime in all of the interactions between Laura and Leland was kind of looking the other way. I mean, you know, the wash your hands scene. I mean, obviously, Sarah knows something is happening. You know, she lets Leland give her that milk that had the roofie or whatever it is, the thing that knocks her out, so sure. That she can't actually be a witness. There's all these things that she did, like knowingly, to look away when Laura was being assaulted by Leland all those years. And I think, I mean, if you were able, if you yourself were witness to something like that for years, I mean, just imagine the guilt that would happen. I mean, imagine all that negative energy that like you would have building up in yourself just because, you know, it's like, oh, I should have done something. I should, you know, like the 10,000 pounds of regret. And, you know, and just like it's. It's something that you need therapy for, obviously, if you want to even have half a chance of getting out of that. And I mean, if you look at Sarah's house, you know, it's like wine bottles and cigarette butts everywhere. And, you know, she's just sitting alone after 25 years. And you would think like if there's this like lowered veil between lodge space and the real world, if you've withdrawn so much from the real world, you're going to be in that negative space. You're going to be you're going to be under the influence of some kind of negative force that would, you know, make you what do you call it? It would like make you more inclined to be drinking and smoking and doing things to run away from the problems and look away further. And eventually, if you have as much lodge influence, like, you know, the picture hanging in Laura's wall or that ceiling fan that can communicate from Bob to Laura, you know, it's like, if you've got all these lodge portals in your house, and technically, like, if Sarah was kind of a lodge portal in that Bob is like half father to Laura. I mean, like she's like sort of lodge influenced all by herself there. You're going to be kind of connected to that in ways like where I think Sarah's subconscious or her, you know, the things that she tries to stuff down could grow into something, especially if she had a frog bug crawl into her mouth back in part eight.
Adding on to that, do you think that's why a not so subtle hint that she might have something to do with Judy is when she eats that guy's fucking head in the bar in like part what 14 ish, mm-hmm. something like that? I guess that adds to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Colin, you seem like you're thinking quite a bit about.
Yeah, something. I mean I think what's interesting about all of this is how. Because, John, you were talking about Laura as someone who, because of the things she saw and experienced, she understandably so needed to perhaps detach or repress some of this. And I guess what I find really interesting is how this dynamic between Judy and Bob is potentially inverted, because if we can imagine that it's Leland acting under the influence of Bob, it's perhaps Bob creating the conditions for Sarah to fall under the influence of Judy, if you wanted to think of it in those terms. And you know, Twin Peaks, it's a complicated story, and it's a complicated narrative, because Sarah is perhaps as much of a victim as Laura is. And it would be perilous, of course, and you weren't suggesting this, but it would be perilous to suggest that she was somehow implicated in what happened to Laura. But I think what's interesting about what you're saying is how it creates this space to think of Sarah as a victim as well, instead of just thinking of her as a kind of accomplice, because she neglected to or refused to, I suppose, confront Leland or confront Bob. And I think it creates the conditions for us to think of Leland's crimes and perhaps by extension Bob's crimes as not directed exclusively at Laura, but it's almost like within this family there's a kind of dual victimization, that both Laura and Sarah are victims of the horrors that men like Leland unleash upon the world.
Yeah. The way Leland did it, yeah, he has victimized Sarah and Laura at the same time. But in the same sense, I mean, Sarah has kind of added to the victimization of Laura. I mean, it's just because she didn't start that way doesn't mean she didn't kind of end that way. And the way I've thought about it, Laura Stewart's written something similar at our site. I'm trying to remember. Brian Allen. Also, like, we've all sort of hovered around the same sort of thing with Sarah, and there's a certain amount of sense that, like, from like a magical realism standpoint, almost, you know, it's like Sarah almost, I would think after a certain point, Sarah feels like a monster. So because of the properties of Twin Peaks, you know, like where you can be superhuman Nadine, you know, like all these kind of things. I mean, I kind of feel like because she figured out that she must be a monster, that made it so in the past. Like, I wouldn't even be surprised if part 8 wasn't added in chronological order. Like, just like how Cooper changed time, I wouldn't be shocked at all if Sarah, you know, finally figured out that, you know, it's like, oh, something terrible must have happened to me as a kid, and there's this thing that's been growing in me the whole time. And so I you know, there's no way to actually say that without using conjecture, obviously, but, you know, like I could see that from like an emotional way, like her, like, sort of internally making herself believe that about herself.
Yeah, which, and I think it's important, and I think this is what you were certainly gesturing towards. She's not a monster of her own making, right? She's a you know, she's been made a monster, I guess. And
yes,
and yeah, I think
it.
Yeah,
it grew from being a victim of Leland and Bob's shenanigans. And eventually she figured out that, yeah, it's like, you know, she must have been an accomplice, or, you know, like, I don't know, like, it didn't start that way, but, like, she kind of feels like, you know, like, from second guessing that, you know, there must be something in her too, or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I think that actually deepens the way we should understand the horrors of figures like Leland. You know, again, it's not just that he raped and terrorized Laura, but he created the conditions for someone like Sarah to imagine that she was accomplice, or that she was an accomplice in this, almost to the point that you could almost read part 8 as potentially a projection, as you said, of Sarah's imagination that this must be why I am the way I am. And it's not because that's who she wants to be or who she actually thinks she is, but this is a consequence of the trauma she's experienced. And even if you think about that moment in the convenience store when she talks about things happen to you, that only deepens the sense of Sarah as a deeply tragic and victimized character. And again, I think, at least as I understand it, a lot of people who think about Twin Peaks, they often think about the horrors the horrors that Laura experienced, and Sarah's experiences are secondary or tertiary. But I think the way you're talking about this really brings to the front how we should really also reckon with what's happened to Sarah as well.
Oh yeah, she's absolutely suffering from the PTSD. Like, there's no way around that. And yeah, if you're stuck in PTSD and like you don't even recognize how to get out of it, it's like I think all you can try to do is try to explain it. Mm. You know, like just to get some sort of control of the situation. Like, why is she in this situation?
So as far as another person that might have a connection to Judy, we were talking about Laura, and then in part 18, Laura becomes Carrie Page. How do you see those two characters relating to Judy in part 18 in particular? Is there any connection? And if so, what should we make of that connection?
Well, I think that Dale Cooper thinks that Judy isn't Sarah. And I think there's all sorts of connections that could lead you to believe that, because Mr. C wanted to find Judy. And, when he finally entered the lodge in, oh my gosh, part 17, right? That's mm-hmm. when he was in the cage, in the black and white fireman scene.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
There's a projector on the wall that the fireman swipes away from. And there's a very particular picture of the Palmer's house right there. And we did some investigating on one of the Facebook groups about which picture that actually matches to. And it's actually the part 12 Palmer house. So that's when Hawk goes up to the door.
Oh,
and
sure.
You know, it's like, it's a goddamn bad story or whatever she was saying. So like, it would lead me to think that Sarah, or that version of Sarah, possibly Judy, wanted to see Mr. C at that door instead of Hawk. And so I think that yeah. Yeah, I wrote about that one too. It's a little more in depth than probably this. You know, take my word for it. It's the part 12 Palmer house. But yeah, so I think that because Mr. C believes that Judy would be at that house, it's probably something that Dale Cooper in part 18 would also assume, because, you know, Mr. C and Dale are the same person. You know, one's a shadow of the other, but you know, they're basically, you know, based on genre fiction, you can kind of assume that they would know what the other person's thinking, you know, mm-hmm. Jekyll, Hyde, all that. So I think in part 18, Dale really was on a mission to stop Judy. Whether that's a valid mission or whether it's just a delusion that Dale's thinking, that's splitting a couple hairs. But I really do think that he was trying to connect Laura and Sarah together again,
and you think that he thinks you think that he thinks taking Laura to the Palmer residence would create some
type of
perfect situation where that would stop it all from happening. I don't know either. Like, obviously it's wild, and to the point where the last thing we get is that Laura or Carrie, whoever she is, might ultimately be realizing that's what he's doing, and that's why we get the scream. I don't know, but yeah, it's interesting to think about. I mean, I think I'm on the Sarah train, Colin. I think I've firmly been placed on the Sarah train.
Well, the show wants you to think it's Sarah, and Dale.
But I don't think I ever did though until I talked to you. That's the thing. Like, I never once thought, oh, Sarah is Judy. I mean, she was eating people. That's the thing that she did. So that's the thing we have to keep in mind. She did do that. So
I tend to think experiment model is what's inside her, and that experiment model is not actually Judy. It may want to be Judy, but you know, it's I don't know. But do you
think that the experiment model is the same person or thing, the being that pukes all the stuff in part 8?
No. No, that's experiment. Experiment model is a thing that wants to be that.
Oh my god, dude. I need to get a whiteboard out real quick and write all this down.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can't imagine, because it's like experiment model saw Judy's or experiment's Instagram page and thought, I can do that. I'll just do that.
Or who knows? Maybe it's a demon tulpa.
Yeah, I know. It's just experiment model's LinkedIn page. I like to eat faces. If you have a position where I can eat faces, I will totally do that. See my previous work where I ate faces in New York and I ate faces in Washington State. Yeah, no, I think, like, hearing you talk about this, John, it just all feels like bullshit to me.
Hey, Colin, you're finally on my level, dude. You finally got there. I'm so happy.
I'm actually on your level too. It's just like, if you're trying to look at it from the plot, it's this screwy little plot that it barely holds water. It barely stays connected to itself, but Dale really believes in it.
Yeah, no, I think that's my point though, is like, this is only the sort of bullshit that a figure like Dale Cooper could concoct and then use that as an impetus to like act in the world. I guess. And in that way, it is an interesting, just to bring this back to something John and I have talked about repeatedly throughout our study and reading of The Return. It's an interesting critique of figures like Cooper and how they ultimately justify their behavior in the world. Because I think, you know, if you want to, I think this is part of this critique that we've made of a figure like Cooper and what he ultimately represents, that like all of the ways that figures like Dale Cooper try to justify their behavior in the world, when you actually get down to brass tacks, it's really just bullshit and nonsense. And we need to call it what it is, you know, and the circuitous way we get at that is fascinating, but I think at the end it's just, okay, Cooper, he's regrettably trying to find ways to justify his behavior. And instead of, and I think this is something Andrew spoke about last week, instead of conceptualizing a way of behaving in the world and a way of interacting with the world that is different from how he's always behaved in the world and interacted with the world.
I think that sounds about right, honestly. Like the everybody in season 3 is basically dealing with some sort of heavy duty trauma. And if they're not dealing with it, they're just not in the story. Sarah fits into this obviously for reasons we've talked about, but I think Dale is basically in his own PTSD because he's stuck in a lodge. You know, it's like he basically lost his entire life. He lost everything except for his purpose, which he's decided to morph into this Judy quest. And I tend to loop it all into the golden shovels metaphor, where basically, like, you know, you need two coats before the shovel is ready to shovel yourself out of your shit. So, like, basically, you have trauma, That's one moment. And then, you know, there's like the point where the point where you get your first coat is when you recognize that you're that you've experienced a trauma. Like you can actually call it by its name, not like by Judy. And then you have to process that for a long time. And then you get a second coat when you can acknowledge it and then decide to do something about it. You know, because it takes a long time to be able to understand that something's happened to you and then to like get the gumption and figure out the plan of like how to do something about it or to decide to do something about it is just like this monumental victory. And that's the victories that we see in The Return all over the place. So basically I think that like when Dale is stuck in this dream and, you know, he's like right at a climactic moment where like he can finally get Judy. And then he's like, but wait a minute, what year is this? You know, it's like, that's him trying to like figure out that like, oh wait, I'm not, you know, like that's him acknowledging that, hey, there's a problem here. And like, I don't think he quite knows what it is yet because, you know, we get our final scene where like, you know, like once Laura screams, then he's back in the lodge with her whispering, you know, it's like, I think, you know, he's finally at a point where like, maybe that was his second coat. And like, now he can like figure out how to get out of the lodge finally after 25 years. You know, he finally woke up and then, you know, off camera and while the credits are running, Philip Gerard saying, finally.
So it sounds like you are more optimistic about the prospects of Cooper doing whatever he needs to do, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I think it's kind of a choose your own ending. Like, you know, it's like, you don't know if that's him dying. You don't know if that's him waking up. You know, it's like, we won't know until Laura finishes whispering and then we see what he does. Cause like the first time that happens in the show, the first time in season three, anyway, you know, she whispers in his ear and then she goes on and says like, you can go out now. But then right at the same time, Philip Gerard cuts in and says, you know, like, come back. And then he meets the tree. So like, you know,
right.
He wasn't ready to go out of the lodge yet. You know, he goes further in literally at the beginning of the series. And then hopefully now that he's made it through all this stuff and that he figured out that this whole Judy thing wasn't working, maybe he can wake up.
Let's hope. Right.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, John, thank you so much for agreeing to do this. We so thoroughly enjoyed talking to you. We were, again, talking to John Bernardi, the managing editor for Twin Peaks content at the website 25YL. Again, John, it was wonderful talking to you. Thank you again for doing this.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I had a nice time here.